This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Fasting from words has changed Alex Grant's poetry. Touring and selling his craft sickened the award-winning poet, and 7 years ago, Alex left the business with no intention of returning. But last year, he was drawn back, and this time to write poetry that was full of meaning even for folks who don't like poetry. Alex's new work includes strange pairings of images like thick-sliced bologna sandwich and a nauseous Tai Chi teacher. Alex Grant is based in Chapel Hill. His latest poems are published in the international multi-genre Fish Anthology 2019. Alex Grant, welcome back.
Thank you, Frank. It's nice to be back.
It's been too long. Last time you were here, you were talking about your poetry, you were talking about the power of words and all of that, and something happened.
Yeah, I'm still there, but I stepped away from it about 7 years ago. Because as you said, I don't know if I would use the word you use, but I became disillusioned and kind of less enamored of the business of poetry, and it was overshadowing my writing, and so I had to take a break from it, and I came back to it about a year ago and realized why I'd come to it in the first place and what it was that I loved about it. So I decided to take a different approach and try to avoid the things that drove me away last time.
What was it that you loved about it and that brought you back?
I think that there's nothing else for me that can say things in quite the way that poetry can. I mean, there are great novelists and great artists, and you know, they're absolutely amazing at what they do. But for me personally, it's up there with anything. It's a great way of expression, and that really drew me to it initially. And I remembered finally what it was that I had done that in the first place and came back to it.
You were doing a lot in between. I believe you were a dental technician, a rope maker, an optical technician, a shepherd. You were a shepherd?
Yeah, those are all going back all the way. A shepherd was the first thing that I ever did, actually.
Wow.
As a job. Yeah.
That's a perfect job for a poet.
Long time ago. Yeah, I wasn't a poet then, so. but yeah.
One of the great poets of ancient times, David, I believe, was a shepherd.
Really?
Yeah, and he wrote some good stuff.
Right.
according to those who read it. So what is it? So you were doing all those things in the meantime, and as you say, the thing that drove you away or made you feel less enamored of the business was the business side of it, the selling of the poetry,
yes,
the marketing.
It was. Yes. Yeah.
So what were you doing in the meantime in terms of poetry? You say you love the power of words, the power of the poem to express really what you're all about, what you're feeling. Were you writing at all in that period?
I wasn't. Yeah. I didn't write. In fact, I didn't even read a single line of poetry in that time. When I stepped away from it, I was 100% certain that I would never come back to it. And the only reason that I came back to it was one of my oldest friends was dying last year, and I wrote a poem about it. And then it kind of got me thinking and looking at things again. And I started to tinker and I started to write. And after a couple of months of that, sounds like a cliche.
It's become a cliche.
Right. Yeah. But I had basically an epiphany, which was I remembered what it was that drew me to it and what was so great about it. And then I thought, well, I need to remember what it was that kind of upset that and made it a negative thing. And so I kind of wrote an essay to myself in which I said, here's what it means to me. Here's what it means to anybody who writes poetry. Here's what's important. Here's what to avoid. And so I'm just working through that process right now. But
Did it change your poetry?
It did. Yeah. Yes, it did.
How so?
Because one of the things that I kind of realized was that poetry is a hard sell at the best of times. It's a very niche kind of a thing, and to me, the poetry that speaks most to me is something that it has poetry in it, but it talks to the ordinary life. The Chinese poets, some current poets, American poets who do it, and I decided that I was going to try and write more in that vein. I mean, I've always tried for that a little, but I've been guilty myself of being a little bit, you know, academic and esoteric. So I thought, I want to write in a more everyday, approachable way.
I'm so glad you didn't say quotidian, because that's the poet's word for
right,
every day. So God bless you for that. Thank you. I was listening for that.
Right.
He says quotidian, we'll arrest him.
Yeah.
Tell me, well, let's have a sample, would you? Because you've got some poetry that you recently published that is in the volume that I mentioned at the, in the intro.
Okay.
Would you read a poem for us?
Okay, sure. This one has a slightly tongue-in-cheek title, but it's kind of to do what we were just talking about. It's called "That One Other Time I Decided to Be All About Eschewing Obfuscation." No more chants of the rope dancers writhing through Necropolis. No more broken saints dancing still without their feet. No wedges of salted cantaloupe dropping through agave. No, I'm power washing my Julie truck before I head to Al's Burger Shack to stand in line and chug a little something, while I wait with students a third my age for a steaming slab of local grass-fed beef in a too-soft mayo-slathered bun. But I still remember that time when the heretic body burned, intended and moved, the random arrangement of atoms and circumstances that make up the world, the gaping child-shaped hole, ragged cut and impossible to mend. Then I find myself thinking that the trouble with young people today is that I'm not one of them, and I consider getting 19-inch rims with toughened sidewalls to counteract the sway on the camper without having to install active airbags or springs. Feel the pain in my leg at the exact moment I forget the word that describes detachment from a feeling or sensation that was previously predictable. Then hear a crack of thunder rolling overhead and think of Odin, the Norse god of war and poetry, one-eyed and long-bearded, the Valkyries hanging on his every word, leading the procession of the dead through winter skies. My burger is ready, and I need another beer. I still haven't decided on the bigger rims. The woman in front of me is breaking my heart, and I am coming unwillingly back to Earth, to its brittle shards of days, to its random immensity, to its garbled, untranslatable language.
Alex Grant reading a poem published in the Fish Anthology 2019. What distinguishes a poem from colorful speech, from the kind of speech that we're attracted to when someone is a really puts it very well? Is there a difference?
No, I don't think there is.
Yeah.
No, I think it's just the form is different, and the ethic is somewhat different, and the perception is somewhat different. But I think all, for me anyway, all great poetry, all really good poetry, attracts me in that way. It can be astonishing, and it can be completely ordinary and everyday in a way, but just completely arresting.
Maybe we'll get into a fist fight over this, but that's what poetry was, wasn't it? Wasn't it meant for everybody always?
Yes.
At a time? And
yes.
I think in the modern age it became abstracted from normal life.
It did, and in fact I was reading somebody's post on, I think it was Facebook, the other day, and they were kind of complaining about how difficult it is to get any exposure or any reaction. And somebody, the comment somebody made I thought was great, and he said, well, the trouble is that poets nowadays are like ninja warriors, and the only people they impress are other ninja warriors. Nobody else cares.
Yeah.
And so he knew that, I'm saying. He was a poet, you know, so.
Well, what about that? I mean, in popular culture, if we take a look at lyrics for popular songs that people are attracted to, hip-hop lyrics that are powerful and grab people because they speak directly to their experience and may exclude other people who haven't had that experience, making references to things that don't apply to me.
Right. And, that's the same thing. It's a niche kind of a thing, but it's a much bigger niche, obviously. But I think there's no reason why poetry can't speak to many more people than it currently does. And I think one of the things that is often missing from it is humor, because it's part of everyday life. It's partly what keeps me sane, especially right now. So why shouldn't it be included? That doesn't fit with, songwriting or songs so much, because it kind of makes it a different thing. But with poetry, I think it's often lacking. And so I love people like, there's plenty of people who disagree, but I think Billy Collins is great because he brings people back to poetry by leading them in with the humor, with the universality, but there's plenty of poetry in it as well. So.
But the technology too, if you think about the way it's delivered, that has so much to do. I mean, the reason that music is what it is today and is as popular as it is, and successful is because there is a commercial platform or multiple commercial platforms that have propelled this, and you've got industry behind it. It seems to me that poetry would do just as well, but you need to, you know, find yourself on it, which brings you back to the thing that drove you out of poetry, the marketing.
Trust me, I'm still trying to work through this thing myself. But yes, you're right. But I think anybody who does any kind of, you know, what they think is meaningful art wants to get it out into the world. I can't remember who it was, but there was a really well-known artist in the early 20th century, and someone said to him, if someone could have told you 100% that you were never going to be famous or recognized, would you have continued painting? And he said no, which is kind of depressing. But at least he was being honest. Right. I mean, everybody wants to get out.
Well, you don't do it. I mean, this is a form of expression. It is not a form of impression. I think that's been the complaint. You know, sort of the early 20th century and some of the more sort of academic stuff that comes out of the academy was criticized for making references to things that, again, don't apply to us, the ancient mythology, and who had that education unless you went to Eton and Oxford. And now, you know, sort of in the post-World War II age, the complaint was, well, you're talking about your dreams, and I can't have your dream. It's so subjective that it's meaningless.
Right.
And so trying to find that middle. But the point is that you are meaning to express to someone, to communicate with someone else, are you not?
Yes, and something that they recognize and can relate to and is understandable and approachable and accessible, but still has poetry in it, because that's what you're trying to do in the end.
What does it do? How does poetry, how is it more powerful, do you think, than just sort of a talk show? We're exchanging ideas now. We may well have provoked some thoughts in the minds of people. We may have provoked people to change the station. Who knows what has happened just now? But most likely we're provoking these thoughts. What's the difference?
I think the difference is it's compressed. It's so compressed, and it's so boiled down, and there's so much goes into producing something that is great poetry, that it just hits you when you see it, when you read it. So it's not a novel. It's not trying to build something up. It's trying to distill, you know, human emotions, or trying to make sense of the nonsensical. And when it does it well, I just don't think there's anything else that quite does it.
I think the making sense of the nonsensical is it for me. Mm-hmm. And that's what, and poetry is trying to do the impossible, because words are defined, right? And we live in a world that I believe is infinite. Mm-hmm. So when you try to define anything in an infinite world, you're bereft, right? You've belittled yourself. You've reduced yourself and the idea, because the idea is infinite, and it's probably coming to me in a very different way, in ways that not only can words not express, they were never meant to express, and that words may possibly do more damage than good in trying to express. And the good poem somehow flips your perception and takes you to that other space, using the very vehicle that got you into this mess in the first place, these awful words.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who said best words, best order? But, you know, somebody said, how do you define poetry? And I think it was Ezra Pound, best words, best order. And that's basically, and it's a lot more than the words and the order. It's the ideas, it's the notion, it's the summing up, it's the evoking some kind of emotion or recognition. And I think when it's done well, it's amazing. There's nothing else like it.
A new way of seeing, allowing you to perceive things in ways that you hadn't before. Which poetry? So what has it done for you? Were you, when you found yourself being drawn back after swearing an oath never to come back, what was your emotion in that reentry? Were you shaking like a spacecraft?
I was really, really happy about it. I didn't think it would ever happen. I really did. I was 100% sure I would never read or write another word or line of poetry. So when it did happen, I was kind of semi-ecstatic about it. And I wrote an essay to myself as a reminder, in case I ever forget again, about why that was so great and why I want to continue that and why I never want what happened before to happen again.
So. But how important was what happened before to you now in terms of the grist, the material for your poetry or not? Are you going back to ideas and ideals that you had before you left?
No, it's different. I mean, I had some work that I'd done before I walked away from it before, and I've kind of kept a little bit of that, but almost everything that I have now in the full-length manuscript that I'm kind of final editing, it's all new. It's all pretty different from what I was doing before. And that was one of the things that I wrote in the essay was direct, everyday, conversational, approachable, universal. I wanted all of those things in my poetry that might not have been there before.
Well, I'm glad, as I say, you didn't use quotidian, and I noticed that in a comical, ironic way, you used eschew, which I think should never be spoken.
It can
be right?
Eschew obfuscation. What the hell does that even mean? Right.
Sounds bad. Sometimes it looks okay. Alex Grant, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I'm glad you're back at it, because now it means you can be on the show more often.
Thanks so much.
Because rope makers, we have them on periodically, but not as often as poets, it turns out.
Okay.
Alex Grant. His work can be found in the anthology, the 2019 Fish Anthology, and there's more to come, and you can find out more about him at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hollab-Moorman. Robin Copley is our technical director. Josie Taurus is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.